everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Economic Development Radio. The Economic Development Radio is produced by Growthmap Infonomics. My name is Thokozani Twala. I'm your host for this particular podcast, where we normally invite some special guests, you know, to come and share insight with us and tell us about the exciting things that they're doing in their own organizations, whether in the private sector or in government as well. Today, we've got a very special guest who's joining us, who'll be talking to us about an interesting topic in terms of saying, how do we grow our economy and especially the manufacturing sector, using tooling being, you know, at the center of everything. Mr. Tapiwa Samang, who's the Chief Executive Officer for what we know as PTSA. PTSA is the Production Technologies Association of South Africa, and they play a very critical role in terms of working with key stakeholders in driving industrialization and manufacturing in the country. But he will tell us a bit more about, you know, his role and his organization. Tapiwa, thank you very much for making time and for joining us for this particular episode.
Thank you, Thokozani. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I will really appreciate Growthmap and the sort of collaboration that we are having with Growthmap. Welcome as well to your listeners across the globe.
Thank you so much, Tapiwa. Firstly, just before we dive into, you know, the core business of what you do as PTSA, let's just give our listeners a sense of who you are as a person. Will you just briefly just give us a sense in terms of some of your key highlights from a professional career point of view, and what also attracted you to this particular industry?
Thank you, Thokozani. I'll probably now call myself an industrial development expert, an accidental one for that matter. I trained as a mining engineer. When I left university, I was actually working in the mines. I did my shifts underground.
Yeah.
Have done my 4 kilometers below surface. I'm still comfortable with mining. Okay. I'm more comfortable underground than driving along the N1. I still think underground, it's
a bit safe.
It's safe. Not a bit safer. It's actually marginally safer. My first trip underground was 1993. Then and now, there's a lot of progress that have actually happened around mining.
Yeah.
How then did I make the transition from a passionate miner to a passionate natural development expert? It's when I joined the DTI. And I joined what was the Industrial Development Division then as the Director for Capital Equipment.
Okay.
The link then was that the mining industry was a big consumer of capital equipment. So it's like I went upstream to see what is it and how are things made that we consume and use in the mining sector. And I got hooked. Then and still now in the DTI, tooling is regarded as capital equipment. So that's how I got exposed now in a deeper way to tooling. I knew what tooling was, just broadly, scratching the surface.
Yeah.
But when I joined the DTI, then that's when I got to know what is tooling, how critical and important is it for any country, for any nation, for any society that would want to industrialize, for any society that would want to upgrade its manufacturing sector. I was amazed with what I saw. It's something that we had not been exposed to. It's something that I personally had not been exposed to. And I can tell you now, if I had known this growing up, I would not have wasted my time underground. I would just have gone to tooling straight away. So that's what I've done. Then started programs of tooling in the country. When I was working in the DTI, the association came to us. They asked for certain things. And luckily for them, I was there and a few other people, primarily a friend, Christian Bears, Tandi Pele, who is chief director in DTI. We understood what this was and we received the message from industry, worked on it. And now we have got a thriving program 15 years on. I left the DTI, went to SADC as the Director for Industrial Development and Trade within the SADC region. That's the 16 member countries of the Southern African region. Did my shift there. And then when I was done, the industry said, come and join us. And that's how I find myself now as the chief executive officer of PTSA.
Interesting background there, Tapiwa. Thank you so much. So really, you've got the technical knowledge, you know, you've been in industry, and then you've also worked in government as well, you know, so you do also understand policy direction from a government point of view in terms of how government is trying to drive industrial development in the country. And I'm sure that comes in quite handy for you as the CEO now leading this particular critical association in the country. For some of our listeners, Tapiwa, who might not be quite familiar with Production Technologies Association of South Africa, PTSA, how do you describe the core mandate of the association to potential members, companies, you know, funders and other partners, sometimes who takes interest in terms of what you do as PTSA? How do you sort of like describe that core mandate of the association?
Right. Maybe I can also just give a bit of a background of PTSA, where we have come from.
Yeah.
We're initially known as the Tooling Association of South Africa.
Okay.
So our business is tooling.
Yeah.
But we changed the name from tooling to Production Technologies because tooling sort of gave us a limited description of what we do.
Okay.
So what has happened over the years is that tooling has evolved beyond to what traditionally was just the tool, die, and molds. Now it includes issues around special machining. There's a lot of design work that go into it, and also assembly systems.
Yeah.
So back in the day, somebody would come and say, all right, I want a tool to make this bottle. But now it involves not just the mold to make the bottle, but also how do you set up the system that makes that bottle? How do you set up the system that fills whatever goes into that bottle? So it's now a bit broader. That's now how we come to be called Production Technologies, because now it's a combination of a number of technologies that come together to deliver to a customer. A customer now wants the whole solution, not just a bit of it or a part of it.
You're looking now at the whole value chain, basically.
The whole value chain.
Okay.
We might not be involved in the whole value chain, but you have to understand the whole value chain for you to deliver a service or a credible service to your partners.
Okay.
But then coming back to our mission, what tooling is that we are a critical part of manufacturing. So we do not exist for ourselves. We exist to support manufacturing. Sure. So we are a critical part in manufacturing.
Yeah.
So our mission, if I can read it, is promoting, protecting, and supporting the collective interest of the tool, die, mold, and special machining industries of South Africa in continual support of the growth and development of all manufacturing sectors. So what happens with tooling is that there is nothing that can be made without tooling. So all sectors depend on tooling, which is why we're talking of all manufacturing sectors.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that helped, Tapiwa, so that at least our listeners, you know, and potential partners and funders, they fully understand, you know, what you represent and your value add as an association. So maybe just, you know, a follow-up to that question. Can you share with us, you know, the main goals and objectives of PTSA? You know, and elaborate a bit in terms of how does the association support and promote collective interest of your member companies?
PTSA is an association, and I think we need to really hit that peg in the ground.
Yeah.
So we're an association, which means we're a grouping of companies.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We think at the moment we have got as paid up members and members in good standing about 30%. Of the companies that are in the tool line mold sector.
Okay.
The other ones, although they might not be members, we work with them.
Yes.
We are in continuous engagement with them.
Yeah.
So if I could draw circles, there's maybe a circle of companies that are our members. There is a second circle of about 600, 800 companies that we collaborate with.
Okay.
They participate in our training. They use our students. They help us mentor students during workplace-based training, and they also employ quite a number of our students. Then there is maybe an outer circle of broader companies that could grow up to probably 1,600 companies which we interact with here and there.
Okay.
So our objective really is to support these companies to regain primarily what we have lost in the country in terms of the tool die and mold sector. And I come back for them to support manufacturing, that manufacturing can grow. Because if manufacturing within our borders grow, then it means our business, the business for our members is actually growing. So time and again, we come up with programs and projects to support that as an association. So currently, the two main programs that we are running is the skills development programs, where we have got four training facilities. We call them centers of excellence in four provinces, in Gauteng, in the Western Cape, in the Eastern Cape, and in KZN. And then on top of that, we have got an enterprise development program where we go into companies, like I would go into Thokozani Pty, compare Thokozani Pty with the best in the world, with similar peers in the world, and measure you against the best practice around the world. So these are the two main programs that we are running at the moment. But then as an association, we also have other things. We do lobbying. We also support our companies in terms of what are the trading conditions, where are they getting their tooling steel from, what are the prices, what are the tariffs. And then in cases of challenges like power, we've had issues with power at the moment. We also represent our members, propose options to government. I remember when there was a close down during COVID, we were one of the associations that went to government and said, can you allow business travel? That key business people can still travel around the world to make sure that things do not completely die. And also we participated in the effort to save lives. We mobilized our constituency to design, prototype and manufacture ventilator parts. In our facilities, we produced about 20,000 ventilator parts. And I remember one doctor, Craig Parker, he was featured on Carte Blanche. He admitted that our pieces saved a few lives. So those are some of the things that we do. We have developed the capacity that we can be a capable tool to assist the state in times of trouble.
And then, Tapio, maybe just in a post-COVID environment, you know, how will you describe the current state, you know, of the industry? You know, when we talk tool, die, molding, and specialized machining industries in the country, where are we in terms of, you know, the current state of the industry? And as you respond to that particular question, I know that recently you've been traveling abroad, you know, in the past few weeks. You've been to Turkey, been to China, engaging with companies in these particular sectors, and you are hosting a delegation from Uganda. So when you look in terms of, you know, what's happening globally around this particular sector, where are we as a country? Are we still competitive? What can we learn? Can you just share with our listeners, you know, your observations?
COVID helped us in a number of issues. I know it's a strange statement to say, but sometimes when you are in a crisis, you get to know who you really are. And that's what, in a way, COVID did for us, because COVID closed the borders. So whilst we could run to the rest of the world to get assistance, that was no longer possible during COVID.
Yeah.
In a sense, you had to help yourself. So. And when you're in a situation like that, that's when you start checking what is it that you have, even in your house, you start to check what is it that you have, what is it that can work. You start dusting off some things that you had really thrown away and you start to reuse them. It was almost like we're back to sanctions all over again. So what happened with COVID is people could not travel. So for companies that are working in the country, they had to look inside the country to get work.
Yes.
Right across all sectors, manufacturing, automotive. But I'll probably give an example of the automotives. One of the OEMs could not get into the country, a first tier company, to do work for them on the assembly plant. And they had to check within. They went to one of our companies, one of our member companies, for assistance. Manufacturing things, programming things, programming robots, putting them on the plant. This is something that company had never done before.
Before, yes.
But the core capability was there. They'd never done it, but the capability was there. Long story short, they were able to come out and actually help this company. Another thing was, if you remember, vaccines.
Yes.
The country started making vaccines during COVID. Again, that is something that we were not doing. What the country does not know is that the company that put up the assembly plant for vaccines in PE,
yes,
is actually our company, Kiasense.
Yeah.
So the capability was always there. So in good times, sometimes you forget to really dig deep and get to know what you have. But when you are pushed to the wall, you then actually start to understand what is it that you do as an individual, as a family, as a community, and as a country. So what we got to learn through COVID is that we're not as bad as we think we are. The only thing is that we're not being given an opportunity. And I really hope that going forward, in insulating ourselves as a country from shocks like COVID, policymakers, that is government, and also people with the order book that then speaks to the OEMs and everybody else, will try to promote the capability that we have, the latent capability that we have in the country, and see how can we activate this, not only to be a standby in times of trouble, but actually to use it on a day-to-day basis. Now, coming to how do we compare with the rest of the world? South Africa used to do a lot of things, and that capacity was lost when the world opened up, and also as we were going through our transition during the early 90s. So a lot of things that we were able to do as a country were lost, primarily lost to East Asia, and primarily China. So a lot of the big things that we could do, we lost that. The same happened to our sector, to the tool, die, and mold sector. We used to make tools, and by the way, always how we describe tools are the things that make things. So we used to make tools that would make your big panels on your car, which is your bonnet, let's say your side panels. We lost that. We lost that to China.
China.
We know some of the people who were even involved in helping China set up their first
capability.
The first assembling plant. We actually hear it was made in PE.
Yeah.
So we used to do these things, but then we lost it. Not only did we lose that capacity, and it's important for people to understand that when you are setting up capability, it's connected. There is a cluster that goes with it.
Yeah.
So let's say we are talking about the big press or stamping tools. It has to go along with the casting.
Yes.
Do you still have capacity to make these 3 meter, 5, 10 meter long castings? Do we still have the machining capacity to machine big parts? So we lost that as well.
Yeah.
So what we are left with is on the tool, die, and mold are the smaller tools. But one thing where we have really gained capability, and we have got a few companies that are world class, is on the assembly systems and on the mechatronics part.
Okay.
I've just been talking about DirecTech that did the work on vaccines,
yes,
in PE.
Yeah.
Got another company in Durban called Design, probably one of the best assembly systems and mechatronics company in Africa. I would probably put my hand on the block for that. Got S4 in PE. We've got a company, a very innovative company called Gendermark in PE. Probably for the past 3-4 years, they've been winning the technology award for Africa.
Yeah.
And these are companies that are doing work whereby 70%+ of their goods and services are actually exported. They're out of the country. And the biggest, the best measure to ascertain your global competence is how much do you export? Because it's an appreciation of how the world sees you.
Yes.
So we've got these companies. So we have lost on the tools, but on the assembly systems, we are
doing quite well.
Yeah, on the assembly systems, we are doing quite well. The visit to China, what it did is I was able, like I said, we have lost the big tools capacity.
Yeah.
I was able to talk to 5 of the biggest tooling companies in China that are making these panels, and I managed to visit one of them, probably one of the biggest. It's called Yishun, just outside Shanghai, on the outskirts of Shanghai. They're making the tools that are making your Amarok and your Ford Ranger. when you go into that place, you then get to appreciate what is probably needed to for us to get back to that level. And part of our challenge, Thokozani, is around markets.
Yeah.
When you are in a market, when you are servicing a market like China does, the logistics and everything, it all comes together.
It's so the whole ecosystem.
Yes. It's not just about making a tool. Yeah. It's about how do I make the tool? How do I interact with my customers? How do I get things to them? Especially during the development stage.
Yes.
So when we are actually looking at how do we recover from what we have lost. It's a whole lot of other things. You might actually think, you might actually see that developing the tooling capability itself is the easier part, is how do we get a functional logistics systems, our ports, how do we connect with our markets? It's a whole lot of other things. It can be done, but I would really want to be honest that there are some things that we have lost that is going to be impossible to get back. Let's get back to Africa. One of our challenges is the markets around us are not as developed as they should be. Or if we had developed markets around us, it would really have helped us as South Africa.
Okay.
One thing that you should never desire to have, Thokozani, is to have poor neighbors. Always aspire to have neighbors which are richer than you. It upgrades the value of your property. It upgrades your neighborhood.
So as you grow your economy, you should also assist your neighbors to grow as well.
Exactly.
Because it's also in your best interest.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And at PTSA, that's the sort of approach that we're now making. So when we talk to Zambia, some people think like, no, we are creating competition. We are not.
Yeah.
We are actually creating rich neighbors.
And creating a new market for South African products.
Exactly. We can't continue looking at markets that are several miles away, because then it means we're not only talking about industrial capability competition, it's also a logistics competition, it's everything.
Yes.
So if consumption goes up in Mozambique, in Zimbabwe, in Zambia, in Botswana, and those markets develop and their consumption is high, that's very good for South Africa. It's very good for South Africa.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we're talking to the Zimbabweans. We're helping them with their curriculum, upgrade it. Because we noticed that in the whole of Southern Africa, 16 countries that are in SADC, only South Africa and Zimbabwe were training toolmakers. Other countries, the whole 14 of them, don't even have a curriculum for training toolmakers.
And that's not good.
It's bad. It's bad for us. Yeah. It's bad for us. So it means when the aspirations of Zimbabwe are limited, it affects us. Yeah. When the aspirations of Mozambique are limited, it affects us.
Yeah.
So we are now training. At the moment, we've got a group of toolmakers that we are training from Zambia, and we are assisting Zambia to start training its own toolmakers in about 18 months. We are hoping they'll have their first enrollment.
Yeah.
We are also outside of SADC. We are working with Uganda. We've got a delegation now that is just coming from Uganda. Uganda is doing some amazing things. It's assembling electric cars. It's assembling electric buses in projects that are supported by the government. We brought them in. We have been talking to them. They are in awe of what we have been able to do, not only as an association, but also as a country. So whilst we are complaining, there are other people who are really thinking we've done amazing things. But in the end, it's about how can Africa work together to develop viable, sustainable markets. And South Africa has a responsibility to actually make sure that that happens. And South Africa should take a leadership role in that. If we do not take that leadership role,
Someone else will come and close that gap.
Yes, the Chinese will come in and do it. The Indians will come in and do it.
Yeah.
And when they've done it, they will do it for their own benefit. And we might find that somebody's having our breakfast on the continent.
Yeah, I think that's a very, great perspective, Tapio. And again, for me, I always say, great organizations tend to think outside in as opposed to thinking, inside out. And that's what I'm seeing, that's the first key nugget I think our listeners will be taking. Because again, a lot of South African equipment is also being used in the African, continent or in the rest of the continent.
True.
So it's in our best interest, to also have these capabilities. Because I will imagine you've got a South African company doing business in Zambia or in Zimbabwe or wherever, and then the machine breaks there. So you must fly a toolmaker from South Africa to go and fix, you know, that particular problem, which then impacts the productivity.
And in every hour that machine is standing, you're losing money.
Yeah. So really we can build, you know, a very competitive, you know, sustainable economy. And again, what you are doing as an association, it's in line with government's policy and approach in terms of promoting regional economic integration, especially in SADC. And hopefully then we start moving to the rest of the continent as well. So well done. I think that's very visionary in terms of what we are trying to do, collaborating and working with other SADC countries.
Thank you.
Okay, then maybe let's also just, you know, as someone who's engaged, you know, with the industry, but you also engage quite a lot with government, as you said, your other role it's doing policy, advocacy, and lobbying. What is that one big challenge, though, that we face, you know, as a country around this particular industry?
I think
We know the energy one, and it seems to be, you know, managing it much better these days, hopefully. But besides, you know, the load shedding issues, you know, that we've had as a country that have affected everyone, what is that very specific big, you know, challenge that you see as someone who's involved in the sector?
Tokozani, the biggest challenge is information.
Okay.
The biggest challenge is knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think that has been our problem. Sometimes the people think the problem is money. It's not. So part of our challenge is to explain what is tooling.
Okay.
If it can be integrated in our society that tooling is important, tooling is critical to manufacture, especially, I mean, in high offices. So each time you go into an organization, you explain to somebody what tooling is. They think you're talking about your shovels, your picks, and they are wondering, why do we need a program to do those things? Although those things are made by tools, that's not tooling.
Yes.
So our biggest challenge is to explain what tooling is and why tooling is critical to the development of South Africa. I'll bet you a few dollars, Tokozani, and I don't have many, that go into government, go into people who control budgets for industry, for incentivizing industry and everything, and ask them, what is tooling? They have no idea. Go into the media, which is why I think this thing that we are doing now is important. Go into the media. What is tooling? They have no idea. Go into the broader society, talk to families and ask, what is tooling? They have no idea.
Especially, I imagine they're in rural areas, you know, townships.
Forget rural areas. Go into Sandton if you can.
In big cities.
In big cities.
Yeah.
And how do we know that? Up to now, when we started training toolmakers in 2010, the percentage of people who did not know about tooling, especially from our historically disadvantaged individuals, was almost 100%.
Sure.
Now we are probably down to about 95%, which is still high.
It's very high.
So the majority of our people, the black people, the colored people, the Indian community and everything, they don't know what tooling is. So it means when a child is growing up, then they aspire to do something in life. Tooling is something that is from another galaxy. It's not there. I ask our graduates as they graduate to say, do your parents now know what you do? Say we have just given up. We just tell them that we are mechanics. Because
they can associate with
them. Yes, they can relate to mechanics.
Yeah.
Some, if by chance they've had some bit of industry exposure, they'll probably know what boiler making is, fitting and turning is, but they don't know what tooling is.
Yeah.
And if you've got a bit of middle-class parents who are really keen to know things, they'll be wondering, what is it that my kid is doing? Will they get a job and everything? So our key issue, and I hope we will all gather together to actually say, for us to develop our manufacturing industry, there are key things that need to be done. And one of that key block is tooling. and that is not there. When you compare with our competitor jurisdictions, we mentioned we were in Turkey a few weeks ago.
Yes.
Turkey teaches mold making in high school.
Oh, wow. So it becomes part of the mainstream.
It's part
system.
Of life. It's part of life.
Yeah.
It's part of life. They teach mold making in high school. You go to your China, people know about how things are made. Go to your Germany, kids leave school at 13, 14, and they take a trade route and they train to be tool makers. By the time they're 20, they're 21, when our kids are going into TVET colleges, into universities, these guys are experts. How can we compete?
Yeah.
So it's about how do we, if we have the aspirations to be a manufacturing jurisdiction, to be the factory of Africa,
yeah,
we need to put policies in place, programs in place that make our people be part of it and understand it. Let me give you just a simple example. When we were in China, because we could not understand the other channels, we ended up just stuck on CNN. I usually don't have time to watch TV a lot. And then I noticed that there were two slots. That week, they're airing a slot on Focus on Africa. They were airing Nigeria. And then the coming week, they're going to be airing South Africa. The one on Nigeria, they were focusing on the fashion industry. Right. So you've got 30 minutes of global coverage, and you focus on fabrics. Then the one on South Africa, it was going to be focusing on Amapiano. So the world is looking at us, and all we can actually show the world is Amapiano. The guys in the art industry maybe will have a dig at me, but that's not who we are. Our aspirations is not to be the best Amapiano country in the world. We want to be one of the best manufacturing countries in the world. But what that shows you is that there are certain things that we'd really want to project ourselves as, and we don't see it. Nobody talks about manufacturing or tooling on our TVs or the social programs, be it our Isindigos, our Soapies. There is no hint that we're a manufacturing country.
Yeah.
There is no hint that we desire to be a manufacturing country. So our people are not informed. For me, that's the biggest challenge.
Wow.
We are a very car-crazy country, but we don't know how cars are made.
Yeah. Because to make those cars, you need tooling.
You need tooling.
Yeah.
A car is just, for us, a car is just some organized components which are made by tools. So when I look at a car, I'm just thinking, oh, how do we make that tool to make these 10,000 parts that in a car? But we just go in and nobody really cares about how those things are made. Yeah. If our craziness about cars would be meshed by how the cars are made, would get somewhere.
No, I think that's very profound, Tapio. And I'm hoping that in our own small contribution in terms of recording this, you know, particular podcast episode, we'll be able to start, you know, collaborating with yourselves in terms of sharing that information.
Yeah.
Because it starts there. You know, when young people then start becoming aware, you know, in terms of these opportunities that are presented to them. And I know that, you know, with some of the young people that you train, the absorption rate in terms of them getting jobs, it's quite high. You know, so you don't get trained and then go and stay at home where now you can't be absorbed by industry. And I think that's quite important as well. It is a critical skill right now.
96 to 100% of our graduates get jobs.
Yeah.
Nobody really struggles.
Which is great.
And the issue about toolmakers is if you don't get a job, you create one.
Yes, yes. And we also need that as well. And hence, you also spoke earlier on to say, yes, you do have the skills development program where you're training young people so that they can be absorbed by industry. But you also have that enterprise development program
as well,
where you are assisting, you know, toolmakers so that they can grow their companies and become globally competitive as well. So just looking at the next key issue for me, Tapio, will you just touch, you know, on one or two, you know, collaborative initiatives, especially with government, you know, that has had, you know, some positive impact to the industry. I know you work very closely with the DTIC, the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. Can you share with our listeners probably just one of those key initiatives that you've collaborated with government quite well and you have had a very good impact?
I think the collaboration with the DTI has actually been godsend for us. As I said, that when industry came to the DTI, fortunately, there were a few key people who understood or who got understood what this was. You know, it wasn't easy. In the end, we had to drag people from their seats and take them around to really show them what we are talking about.
Yeah.
And that way. That's the first thing. The other thing, South Africa supports the automotive industry in a big way.
In a big way, yeah.
Billions are given to the automotive industry as incentives for models by the DTIC. And one of the things that that we were saying to government is about 50% of the market for the tool, die and mold sector in South Africa is actually in the auto sector. So one of the things that we pushed on the automotive incentive scheme was for tooling to be one of the requirements for support. I personally served on the automotive incentive scheme adjudication committee on two occasions.
Okay.
The first occasion was actually to push for tooling to actually be there. And during my tenure, the first tenure, I would actually assist the committee in terms of what is tooling and how do we really measure if what the companies were saying was something that we really wanted to support. The second tenure was actually to increase the level of tooling. I haven't checked in recent years where it was, but it was appreciating that for the automotive sector to thrive, or actually let's say the automotive sector is just tooling. So if you are to promote local tooling in the cars that are made in the country, you then give a very captive market for the local tool and die and mold sector. So that really worked well. Not only is it working for the OEMs, but also for suppliers. So for component manufacturers that are in the country, you get support for locally made components, and you also get support for tools that are made in the country for the production of local components. So we really see that relationship with government as working well, besides the massive support that we've really received from government in our programs.
Now that's great. And I really hope that, you know, that partnership continues. I know that, I mean, we just came out from the May election, and this new government of national unity, as one of its priority, it's all about growing the economy and creating jobs. And I really hope that in the 7th administration, you as PTSA, you'll continue to collaborate with government, because for us to grow the economy, we need, you know, both government and private sector to work together. And I guess for me, you are also, you know, that intersection between industry and government. And Tapio, there's some few key questions that I just want you to quickly, you know, just respond to. Hopefully our listeners will benefit from particular questions. For you, what is that one advice that you can give to a company that is operating within the tool, die, mold, and specialized machining industry? If there is a particular owner within this sector listening to this interview, what will be that one advice that you can give to them?
Well, the first thing is really that you are in a key sector. So if you're already operating in the tool, die and mold and special machining sector, you are in a key sector. If I can say this to South African companies, you need to upgrade.
Okay.
The world is upgrading. I go into facilities which have got machinery that is older than me, and I'm not very young. I'm in my mid-50s, that are quite old. The world is moving, and that is something that you also see reflected when you visit our training centers. We've just introduced 5-axis machining. So you need to upgrade. We were in China. One of the things that we're asking the Chinese guys is, can you collaborate with South African companies? And they were saying, no, give me a list. This is what I do. Give me a list of collaborative companies that I can work with in South Africa. Get the order. We work together. We develop the tools and we pick and choose what is it that can be done within South Africa. I'll tell you, Tokozane, I started scratching my head thinking, oh, is it Tokozane Pty? Is it Tapiwa Pty?
Yeah.
So the market is there. The world is there. What will happen is the government will put in policies that want to promote local manufacturing.
Yeah.
But the government will not do that, will not do the work for you.
For you.
Many times local content programs fail because there are no local partners that can actually plug into the gap. Like now, I think our target for 2030 for vehicles was to have 60% local content. We are very likely to miss that target.
Yeah.
Why? Not because government has put in.
Yeah.
Government has got incentives. But there is no one who is actually coming up, filling in the gap in terms of what needs to be done. So innovate, make sure your systems are okay, upgrade, use artificial intelligence. When you go into these factories in China now, in Turkey, you see how the use of artificial intelligence is coming up, how the robots everywhere, and how the level of precision and repeatability is actually taking over the sector. So one, upgrade. Two, connect yourselves to sustainable value chains. Collaborate.
Yeah.
Yes. Work with your Chinas, and then also into the continent. South African companies are not very good in going into the rest of Africa. So besides the tele companies
and retail, your
MTN, your ShopRite,
yeah.
You rarely find real South African capability that is there on the continent. And this is a very growing market.
Markets, yeah.
We need to take advantage of it. So that will be my advice. Don't be stuck in South Africa. Go out there, see what the rest of the continent is doing. Set up shop in Botswana. Just understand what are the taxes, what are the incentives that are being given in this country. Set up shop there. With the Africa Continental Free Trade Area coming in, and that is also a subject that a lot of South African companies do not understand.
Yeah.
You need to position yourself in a space where you can take advantage of the rest of the continent market.
And timing is everything, you know, and the right time is now. I'll add just one thing in that list of advice. You know, they must also join PTSA as well.
Very well.
So that they can be very close to you and get a sense
they'll get my services for free.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I think, Tapio, can I just ask you, you know, maybe just to be a bit brief in terms of this one. How do you see the role of the sector evolving in the next 5 to 10 years, at least? You know, that's sort of my last question to you. How do you see the sector evolving in the next 5 to 10 years? Just your key trends that you are picking up.
So in South Africa, we're under pressure, which means we have to grow manufacturing.
Yeah.
We still have to maintain mining, if I can call it that. We thought it was a sunset industry. That sun is not setting down.
Yeah.
It's still there and it's one of our biggest opportunities. So it's a question of then saying, how do we connect the dots of what we have as South Africa? Right? We've got we still have a very growing mining industry. We have got young people that are around. We've got a growing market in South Africa and around us, a young population. So I would say the role of the tool, die and mold sector will grow as we produce things not only to feed ourselves, but actually to give services to the growing industrial capability around us. This is what China did. China in 30 years managed to get about 800 million people out of poverty. And the key lever there was their manufacturing sector. And at the center of it was tooling.
Yeah.
So we will need that. Then for the rest of the continent, as I said, there's very little tool, die and mold capability that was there. Everything is almost imported. So that gives a big opportunity for those who are already in the sector in South Africa. So in the next 5 to 10 years, there are nationalist aspirations that are coming up on the continent. How do we make things in our own countries and everything? So part of that we'll have to include tooling. Otherwise, they will just continue being imported.
Importers, yeah.
So that's going to be key for the next 5-10 years. As Africa pushes to eliminate, or let's say to reduce poverty, increase employment, there is a big opportunity for the tool dye and mold sector.
Yeah. So basically, to sum it up, our industrial development needs to be tooling centric in terms of what we need to do to grow the manufacturing sector. Thank you so much, Tapio. I know that, you know, we wanted to discuss, you know, many other things, but just because of time, I'm sure we'll have, you know, a follow-up interview, whether with yourself or some of your colleagues, because I think really our listeners will benefit in understanding more about the work that you do as PTSA. But again, in terms of the critical role of tooling within, you know, driving the manufacturing sector going forward. So maybe as we close, if, you know, there is anyone who's interested in collaborating and reaching out or learning more about yourself, how do they, you know, contact you? What's the best way of them reaching out to PTSA? And maybe even where you've got physical, you know, offices or facilities, you can point out those to our listeners as well, Tapio.
The first place would be our website, www.ptsa.co.za. And then we have four regional centers across the country. That makes it quite easy physically.
Yeah.
The public, especially the young people, you are really welcome to come in into our centers and just ask, what is this tooling thing that I'm hearing about? How can I join? I hear you get jobs. I hear it's well paying. I hear you can be good entrepreneurs. How do I join? So you can walk into our centers in Pretoria West, Hermanstad. Can walk into our center in Cape Town, in Paro.
Yep.
Can walk into our center in Klebeka, in the old Herald building, close to the CBD. Can walk into our center in KZN, in Pinetown, off Ram 23, just before you get to Marin Hill, and talk to our very
friendly staff. Yeah.
And then you can also talk to a number of graduates. Now, Tokozani, if you go onto LinkedIn and you key in toolmaker, tool setter, CNC operator, I'm noticing that a growing number of the responses that you get are people who have trained with us.
Wow.
So just talk to any tool maker and they'll actually give you information about what they do and they'll point you in the right way and we can train you.
Wow, that's quite amazing. Tapio, thank you so much for making time, but most importantly for sharing, you know, the key insights with us. And to our listeners, I hope you do find, you know, this particular interview very informative in terms of understanding what's happening within the tooling industry in the main. But there is an open invitation from Tapio and his colleagues from PTSA regarding any potential collaboration going forward. Until our next episode, thank you so much. Cheers.